Carrie Peck is the elder law attorney with Peck Ritchie, the law firm that we sometimes do commercials for. Sometimes we ask Carrie for his expertise. Today is one of those days. He's in the studio. The number's 312-981-7200. If you've got a question or comment about what? Who normally calls you? It's not 90-year-olds, it's 60-year-olds and 40-year-olds, right?
Well, it's 40-year-olds and 60-year-olds if their parents are still alive at 60-year-olds. But 40-year-olds often call about the problems with their parents, estate planning problems. Mom or dad had a stroke. They might need what's called a guardian to make decisions for them, the management of their money, management of their assets and health care, things like that.
But let me ask you this. What percentage of your clients are people who are asking about, say, estate plans, wills on their own behalf, or it's family members who have an issue with the way the parents' assets are being managed? You and I normally talk on the radio, and it's more adults who are fussing about grandma, you know, mom, the elderly parents, and maybe the siblings don't have an agreement. Is it more often, though, people just taking charge of their own affairs and asking you to write their will?
I would say that the bulk of the calls are disputes. The bulk of the calls are people fighting over their parents' or their relatives' money. But there are certainly a lot of calls in terms of what should we do with our own money in estate planning purposes.
What percentage of your cases or clients end up going before a judge or a jury?
A large percentage.
Really?
A large percentage.
Really?
I mean, we do a lot of litigation in the probate courts in Cook County and the surrounding counties. And, again, it's usually over what's called a will contest or a trust contest. And the allegations in almost every case are that someone lacked the mental capacity to do that planning, those documents, and or they were unduly influenced by someone to favor one child over the other. You know, typical example is one child takes mom to a lawyer and cuts the other children out. So clearly that child had some undue influence over mom, persuaded mom to cut the other kids out. And the question, of course, is if mom had a stroke before she did she have the mental capacity and was she unduly influenced?
But if she does have the mental capacity, she and her favorite son or daughter can find an attorney and cut everybody out if they want, right?
They can, but that favorite child should not be involved in that process if
really?
They wanted to withhold successfully oppose a challenge.
If they want to successfully oppose the challenge, that is to make it stick that mom gave you all the money.
Yeah,
you can't be helpful in that regard?
Well, you can be helpful to the extent that if a child calls me and says, I want to bring mom in and do estate planning, the red flags go up, okay?
Really?
Yeah, the red flags go up because why isn't mom calling me and saying I want to do planning? And so that child, in almost all instances, is going to be accused of unduly influencing mom, even if mom has mental capacity to do it.
So then it's up to those moms and dads in this case to, of their own volition, reach out to you and cut the other rascally kids out.
Right, exactly.
How often does that happen? I would imagine almost always the parents include equally their children.
Agreed 100%. It rarely occurs when a mom or dad comes in and says, you know, I hate those two kids and I love only this one. It's usually motivated by one of the other kids.
I could imagine, though, in some peak of anger, though, they're mad. They said, that's it. I'm done with that kid and I'm cutting them off. And you can do that, too, right?
You can do it as long as you're mentally competent. And I would suggest you tell your lawyer why you're going to do it. You know, there are some circumstances that warrant it. For example, if a child is a drug addict, okay, or if a child has special needs, you're going to create a different device for a special needs child. But if somebody's a drug addict or a gambling addict, then you don't want them leaving money to foster those habits.
Do you recommend that you set an age at which the money would actually go? So if I died tomorrow but my kid's 19, I think he ought to make it in life on his own until he's 30, say. I don't want to just gift him whatever little money I have left. So do they do that often?
Yes. And in that kind of scenario, we create typically a trust. We name a trustee. It could be another family member to manage those assets and disperse those assets maybe at half at 25, half at 27, and the balance at 30. so that we can do that to accommodate the needs.
What does it mean, manage the assets? You're talking about money in some mutual fund, right?
Right, mutual fund, or they engage a professional to manage the assets, you know, at one of the banks or one of the brokers.
Sure, companies. But I mean, different kids could have different ideas about how that money should be managed. We're in our 50s, we're going to live another 40 years, so we need to be in an aggressive stock fund. And then the other kid says, no, I think we should be in bonds, the market's overinflated. So who decides how to manage those assets?
The trustee. If mom or dad names a trustee, which is a third-party individual or entity, to manage those assets for all of the kids, that trustee has a fiduciary duty to mom and dad and the kids to manage them properly.
So is that somebody at Wintrust or Schwab or someplace like that?
Could be somebody at Citibank or Schwab or any one of those organizations.
And do I disagree with them? Maybe they say, you know, we're just going to play it low. We're going to do this, and I think you should do X. Doesn't matter. The trustee will have the
authority. Trustee is going to have the final authority to make that decision. Because if things go south in the aggressive one, that child's going to be suing the trustee.
Got it. I got that. When you do, you said a lot of times that you do litigate. Do those cases go before a judge or a jury?
Generally, I would say 99% in front of a judge.
And is that because you want it in front of a judge?
I think that certainly my preference is I want it in front of a judge because the judge has become informed and educated, kind of an expert in this arena. And while I have complete faith in the jury system, it's very hard to teach a jury of 12 people plus two alternates trust in estate law in a matter of, you know, 2 days.
And when you think about the sort of everybody, I know so many people going through these sorts of issues, and it's not something that's maybe going to be litigated, but just mom and dad want this. You've got to go. Are you going to go up this weekend? I got to go up this weekend now. Oh, my God, dad hurt his knee. What are we going to do about that? I mean, it just seems like all we do right now, if you're in your 50s or 60s, is take care of your parents in their 80s and 90s.
Well, I agree with you, and the good news is a lot of people do it. You certainly do it, but there's a lot of people that don't do it, and that's a problem in and of itself.
This listener says, I have a child who distanced themselves from the family over 13 years ago, and I went to my attorney and I wrote a trust that removed that child from receiving anything. I shared with that attorney an email from that child stating that they didn't want anything to do with us. And yes, I did have to explain to the attorney the circumstance by which I was cutting out that one child. This is what you were talking about a minute ago.
Yes.
It's not, I would imagine, though, that the reason you give an explanation is just in case somebody comes back to challenge it.
Right. That lawyer is likely to be deposed, which means sworn under oath and asked questions as to those kind of conversations. Now, there are certainly some attorney-client privileges that can't be violated, but that's likely to happen. And that lawyer is going to be required, likely, to produce their records relative to this. If that child from 13 years of distance comes back and says, you know, mom took my money away and I expected to inherit.
You know, I thought about you the other day, this will sound weird, when it was in the press, and I don't think this is true, that Britney Spears was going to adopt a baby. She's going to have a little girl. She's going to adopt a baby. And I thought, who in their right mind is going to let Britney Spears adopt a baby? And I thought there was some court-appointed person other than her father who was helping to oversee some of her financial affairs. I don't know if that person would have any say over whether or not she should adopt a baby, but I thought, what agency would allow Britney Spears to adopt a baby? She's, you know, not always a well person. I wonder if you had any thought about that, and if mom or dad want to do something that isn't financial, though. They want to move, or they want to buy a new car. I guess that's a financial thing. They want to adopt a dog. Do their children have any say over those decisions? You and I usually talk about money, but there's a whole range of things that parents could decide to do, and the kids might decide it's not in their best interest. In fact, it's a bad idea. About that?
Well, if you start with Britney Spears, the question I think is, you know, Britney fought with her father. Everybody watched that pretty closely. The father was removed. In fact, the court found that the father, you know, inappropriately used the money, took fees, things like that. When it comes to mom or dad, And the analysis is really all often the same. Do they have the capacity to make that decision? If mom or dad are fine, they can adopt the dog regardless of what the kids think. If mom or dad want to move and they're capable of making their own decisions, then they can move anywhere they want. You know, too often, quite bluntly, John, the children are watching the checkbook and trying to determine if mom or dad move, what it's going to cost them in receiving their inheritance. And, you know, that's not the way we should be looking at taking care of and allowing our parents to make decisions.
I need to take a break. Answer this question before we do. Do stepchildren have the same rights as the biological children?
They do not.
Do they have any rights, the stepchildren?
They have the right to go in and argue, maybe, but they don't. They certainly, you know, if you're not a biological child, you know, your standing is diminished.
And so if the person dies without a will or an estate plan, eventually the money would go to the biological children, but not the stepchildren?
Generally not, unless they're added in.
But you, if you're making an estate plan or will, presumably you will consider those kids and then treat them as equals or at least divvy up some percentage of the assets.
Let's make sure we're on the same page. You're talking about stepchildren being the children of a spouse that they did not have together.
Right.
Yeah. That stepchild really has no right to inherit from their non-parent.
Yeah, but it's the man that my mom married, and now maybe mom has died or the couple has died. You married my mom. I guess my natural train of assets would be my biological father, not my stepfather. Is that what you're saying?
Right, and it goes down kind of like a tree, straight down from parents, you know, to biological children. If you want to leave money to a stepchild born to another marriage, so to speak, you're going to have to insert that in your will.
Oh, that's right, 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 right. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Okay, a couple calls for Carrie Peck and some text messages, too. The elder law attorney at the Peck Ritchie Law Firm is here. My number is 312-981-7200. Kathy, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Yes, my father has two children, me and my sister, and my stepmom has one child. My dad is 93, and my stepmom is 75. And so their will is that whoever goes first, all the assets go to the remaining spouse, which we're fine with. But the likelihood that the remaining spouse will be my stepmom. And then the current will is that the assets are divided equally three ways after the remaining spouse passes.
That's good.
But, well, it's good for now. But it's not an irrevocable trust. And so what is there in place if my stepmom, after my dad passes away,
right,
changes the will and trust so that her child is the sole recipient?
That's a really interesting question. What about that, Carrie Peck?
Well, regrettably, you're 100% on point. She has the ability to do that. She has the power to do that. And I would strongly recommend that you persuade your father, if you can, without exerting undue influence, that it's not appropriate to let him, you know, to leave his assets to her and let her cut you out. I mean, that's basically what you're talking about.
How do you fix that? Is there an irrevocable living trust? Rupert Murdoch has.
He can, exactly. That's right. Rupert Murdoch's been all over the news fighting with his children over whether he should stay conservative and Fox News or potentially go liberal with, as the other children want. So, yes, you could create an irrevocable trust for your father, and that's certainly one device.
And would it be wrong for her to drive Dad to the attorney's office to set that up?
It would be wrong. I mean, she can drive him, but she can't be in the room, and she shouldn't be whispering in the ear of the lawyer.
Well, my sister and I have tried to get my father to do that.
What does he say?
His response is, well, I guess they'll just have to be nice to so-and-so.
That's what I was going to say, but that was me being funny. But do you worry that, in fact, your relationship with her is not like it is naturally with your father and that she will cut you out? Is that your concern, Kathy?
I have a better relationship with her than I do my own dad. However, blood
the plot
is thicker
thickens.
Than water.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's another option here, and that would be potentially to ask your dad to transfer that, you know, some of that money to you during lifetime, unless they need it for living expenses. He could gift you the money.
Yeah, and the concern is, and this is my concern too, is that my stepmom is so much younger than he is. I don't want her to be without assets later
right.
in life.
She's 75. She could live another 20 years. Your dad's in his correct. 90s, so.
Right.
All right, Carrie. Thank you for the call, Kathy. Carrie, just a last bit of wisdom for a case like this.
Well, I think that it's important that everybody sit down as a family, if they can, and have this kind of conversation. You know, dad could put assets in joint tenancy with his two children
That's
as well.
That's what I was thinking of, right?
You know, joint tenancy is dad and Mary. Dad dies and the property goes to Mary. The assets go to Mary. So there are a lot of remedies here, but it's going to take everybody's cooperation and a real, you know, sit down by the family.
But he could transfer the money. That is, they could park the money in a place and Kathy and the siblings not spend it,
right.
but also have it in a way that if dad dies first, that they would have access to the money.
Agreed, 100%.
Okay, I'll give Carrie's phone number and website. It sounds like this is more of a conversation that we're going to have here. But, Kathy, good luck to you in Peoria. Let's go to Mary in Chicago. You're on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question for the elder attorney.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law is 85 years old. She's living in assisted living facility. She has dementia. My question is, she has four sons, one of which is my husband. One of her sons, the youngest one actually, has taken it upon himself to handle her finances, you know, make sure that the money's being withdrawn for her costs at the assisted living facility.
Right,
and so
right,
on.
Right. Yeah, what about that?
However, the problem is he's investing her money in Fidelity and stuff like this. He does not have a power of attorney. So my question is, he's not sharing any of this information with the other three.
What about this, Carrie?
Well, if he doesn't have a power of attorney, who authorized him to use it? Is he signing her name? I mean, how's this going down? If she's got dementia, she can't sign her own name. It depends on how far the dementia's progressed. But, you know, it strikes me that, once again, the four boys have to sit down and have a conversation.
Okay, but if the one is resistant, and I suspect he is, then can you take them to court? You can say this man is manipulating this mother's money and he doesn't have the right to do so?
The answer is you file for guardianship over mother and the three sons that are in agreement seek the appointment of perhaps your husband as guardian. Then somebody's court-appointed. They can take action on her behalf subject to court approval.
You can strip then that son of the fiduciary responsibilities he's taking, even though he doesn't really
have
the right to
do it.
Well,
he assumed it. He doesn't have it, certainly if he doesn't have a power of attorney, I would talk to a lawyer about guardianship case.
Mary, good luck to you on all of that. If an estate is in probate, can the trustee or executor change what was in a will?
No, absolutely not.
Could the biological children of the original spouse fight with the stepchild to get the money in a case like that? This is a different text message. Could the biological children of the original... What if the money is left to a spouse? The spouse then passes away, and they leave that inheritance to their child. Could the biological children, this is the case that we were talking about.
This is
a
Mary case phone call.
Boy, this happens all the time, doesn't it?
It does. You know, today our society, multiple marriages, it happens all the time. The answer is you could fight with them, but the question is, was there a document that left them the money? Was there a will? Did she have capacity to do it? Was she unduly influenced?
Yeah.
It's not an easy fight if there's a document that gives the stepchild the money.
Carrie, we're out of time.
Well, John, you know, time goes by quickly. We have a lot of calls, a lot of texts, and it's always a pleasure to be here.
We just get to a fraction of them when you're here. If folks want to reach out to you, it's the Peck Ritchie Law Firm, peckritchie.com. And what's the phone number, Carrie? 312?
312-201-0900. That's 312-201-0900.
Peck Ritchie Law Firm. Carrie Peck, nice to see you again, my friend.
Great to see you, John.